Chapter 16. Three of the Hokuts, Max, Wilma, and Gilma, were loitering around the garage under my apartment when Ginger and I made our exit a few hours later. I guess they wanted to meet her. They looked at her scornfully as I made cheerful introductions. I half expected Max to say something ridiculous like, "We did not contemplate illicit sex when we leased this place to you." But nothing offensive was said, and we quickly drove to the office. She jumped in her car and disappeared. The latest edition was stacked floor to ceiling in the front room. I grabbed a copy for a quick perusal. The headline was fairly restrained. Danny Paget trial begins, jury sequestered. There were no photos of the defendant. We had used enough of those already, and I wanted to save a big one for the following week when, hopefully, we could nail the little thug leaving the courthouse after receiving his death sentence. Baggy and I had filled the columns with the things we'd seen and heard during the first 2 days, and I was quite proud of our reporting. It was straightforward, factual, detailed, well-written, and not the least bit lurid. The trial itself was big enough to carry the moment. And truthfully, I had already learned my lesson about trying to sensationalize things. By 8 a.m., the courthouse and the square were blanketed with complimentary copies of the Times. There were no preliminary skirmishes on Wednesday morning. At precisely 9 a.m., the jurors were led in, and Ernie Gaddis called his next witness. His name was Chubb Bruner, the longtime investigator for the Sheriff's Department. According to both Baggy and Harry Rex, Bruner was famous for his incompetence. To wake up the jury and captivate the rest of us, Gaddis produced the bloody white shirt Danny Paget was wearing the night he was arrested. It had not been washed. The splotches of blood were dark brown. Ernie gently waved it around the courtroom for all to see as he chatted with Bruner. It had been removed from the body of Danny Paget by a deputy named Grice in the presence of Bruner and Sheriff Coley. Tests had revealed two types of blood, O positive and B positive. Further tests by the state crime lab matched the B positive with the blood of Rhoda Casselaw. I watched Ginger as she looked at the shirt. After a few minutes, she looked away and began writing something. Not surprisingly, she looked even better her second day in the courtroom. I was very concerned about her moods. The shirt was ripped across the front. Danny had cut himself when he crawled out of his wrecked truck and had received 12 stitches. Bruner did a passable job of explaining this to the jury. Ernie then pulled out an easel and placed on it two enlarged photographs of the footprints found on the patio of Rhoda's home. On the exhibit table, he picked up the shoes Paget was wearing when he arrived at the jail. Bruner stumbled through testimony that should have been much easier, but the point was made that everything matched. Bruner was terrified of Lucien Wilbanks and began stuttering at the first question. Lucien wisely ignored the fact that Rhoda's blood was found on Danny's shirt and chose instead to hammer Bruner on the art and science of matching up footprints. The investigator's training had not been comprehensive, he finally admitted. Lucien zeroed in on a series of ridges on the heel of the right shoe, and Bruner couldn't locate them in the print. Because of weight and motion, a heel usually leaves a better print than the rest of the sole, according to Bruner's testimony on direct. Lucien harangued him to the point of confusing everyone, and I had to admit that I was skeptical of the footprints. Not that it mattered. There was plenty of other evidence.
"Was Mr. Paget wearing gloves when he was arrested?" Lucien asked.
I don't know. I didn't arrest him.
"Well, you boys took his shirt and his shoes. Did you take any gloves?"
Not to my knowledge.
"You've reviewed the entire evidence file, right, Mr. Bruner?"
I have.
"In fact, as chief investigator, you're very familiar with every aspect of this case, aren't you?"
"Yes, sir."
"Have you seen any reference to any gloves worn by or taken from Mr. Paget?"
"No."
"Good. Did you dust the crime scene for fingerprints?"
"Yes."
"Routine, isn't it?"
Yes, always.
And of course you fingerprinted Mr. Paget when he was arrested, right?
Yes.
Good. How many of Mr. Paget's fingerprints did you find at the crime scene?
None.
Not a single one, did you?
None.
With that, Lucian picked a good moment to sit down. It was difficult to believe that the murderer could enter the house, hide there for a while, rape and murder his victim, then escape without leaving behind fingerprints. But Chubb Bruner did not inspire a lot of confidence. With him in charge of the investigation, there seemed an excellent chance that dozens of fingerprints could have been missed. Judge Lupus called for the morning recess, and as the jurors stood to leave, I made eye contact with Miss Callie. Her face exploded into one huge grin. She nodded as if to say, "Don't worry about me." We stretched our legs and whispered about what we had just heard. I was delighted to see so many people in the courtroom reading the Times. I walked to the bar and leaned down to speak to Ginger. "You doing okay?" I asked.
"I just want to go home," she said softly.
"How about lunch?"
"You got it."